Greetings. I'm Dr. Gloria Bachman, an obstetrician gynecologist from Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, and I'm here to talk with two of my colleagues on the early perimenopausal patient. Dr. Levine, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Dr. Bachman. I'm Dr. Jeff Levine, professor and director of reproductive and gender health programs in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health.
And Dr. Nancy Phillips.
Hi, I'm Dr. Phillips, and I am a professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School.
So, what we'd like to start this podcast with is some role playing, where Dr. Levine will be the primary care clinician who's taking care of Veronica Smith, who's a 45-year-old patient who is new to his practice and who comes in with a complaint of irregular menses. Dr. Levine?
Hi, Mrs. Smith.
Hi, Dr. Levine. It's very nice to meet you, and you can call me Veronica.
Hey, great, Veronica. So, welcome to our practice. What brings you in today?
I'm getting a little concerned about my periods. They have always been very regular, and over the past 6 or 8 months, they're tending to get a little closer together. I've skipped one or two, but they still look like what my periods have always looked like. They're not painful, and they still last about 5 days, but it's just unusual for me.
All right. Thanks for sharing that. So if we could just qualify things a little bit. So you tell me your periods traditionally had been pretty regular. Do you mean they would come how often?
They would be about every 28 days, 30 days. They'd last for 5 days. But now they're getting a little bit closer together. And like I said, I think in the past year, maybe I've skipped 3 months. But then I get it back the next month for a few months, and it looks about the same. It just, like I said, a little closer together.
And when you say you skip 3 months, do you mean all at the same time, or would you skip a month, get a period, skip another month?
I would skip a month, get a period, skip, get 2 or 3 periods, skip another month.
And at any time, did those periods last more than 5 days?
No, they always looked okay, but they always made me panic a little bit because I don't want one of those midlife babies, and I am sexually active, with my husband.
Okay. So also when you get the periods, traditionally, how many pads or tampons do you use on the heaviest days?
Maybe three.
Are those pads, tampons?
I use tampons. I change them about every 6 hours and they're not soaked. I don't ever soak through.
Okay, no clots or anything like that.
No.
And any significant pain with your periods?
Cramping, but nothing that keeps me home from work or makes me take anything more than maybe a Motrin.
And with the change that you've noticed that your periods first getting closer together and then tend to sometimes skip a period, when you get the periods, they haven't been very heavy or painful?
No.
Okay. And I understand certainly about your concern. You said you are sexually active and that's with your husband, you said?
Yes.
Any issues with sex?
Not quite as interested as I used to be, but I think we're still doing okay. Once in a while, I need a little lubricant, but that also works fine.
Okay, but compared to in the past, any pain with sex?
No.
And when you say not as interested, does that seem to be certain times, like on weekdays, or different than when on vacations, or does it seem to be all the time now that you notice a difference?
I mean, we're just two busy people, and sometimes we have more interest. We tend to do better on weekends and vacations, but I don't think it's, it feels like it's okay for where we are in our relationship.
And no other issues with your relationship?
Nope.
So, along with this change that you're noticed with your periods, any other symptoms that you've noticed?
Not really, like what?
Well, sometimes I find that patients like yourself, as they're becoming more mature, sometimes they notice the change in their periods, but sometimes they'll get things like hot flushes where they or night sweats, where at night they just feel like they get soaked, sometimes just mildly, sometimes significantly. Sometimes they feel like they have to open the window, even if it's in the winter. Anything like
Oh, yeah, that sounds like me. Covers on, covers off, windows up. I get hot, I take off a layer. Then I do feel like it is interfering with my sleep a little bit. And yeah, maybe it's making me a little bit more irritable when I go to work in the morning. I'm a little bit more tired than I feel like I used to be. But I kind of thought this, you know, it's summer now and we have a thick quilt, and I just thought it was just normal.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that, because it actually may be related to why you're having a change in your period. So I just want to ask you a few other questions. You noticed that you said you get a little bit more irritable, and, you know, certainly if you're not sleeping well, that can make you more irritable, but does it ever seem to be affecting your mood at all?
I guess I feel, you know, I feel a little bit more sad than I used to. I don't feel as much interest in some of the things I used to like to do. I thought it was maybe because my daughter just moved away for a new job, and I work a lot, and I don't know. I just felt like, you know, I'm tired and maybe older, and this is how it is.
Thank you, you know, again, for sharing that. I will tell you, this is something that I see a lot of patients for. And like I said, it's very common when women are getting more mature that the first thing they might note is a change in their periods. And actually, a lot of patients think, well, that means they're just going to get further apart. But initially, sometimes they actually get closer together. And then slowly what happens is they start to get further apart. And then sometimes they eventually stop coming altogether. And often soon after that, a lot of my patients, they get something called vasomotor symptoms. You get a fluctuation in certain hormones called estrogen. And with that fluctuation, parts of your brain and your blood vessels react because they kind of get starved for that hormone. And they cause what are called hot flushes and night sweats. And of course, if they're significant enough, often will interfere with sleep. And again, if you have a change in your sleep, that can make you irritable. But
so it's not just me.
It's not just me.
That's very reassuring.
Well, one thing I would like to do is sometimes it's hard to separate out whether that may be causing some of your changes in how you feel in terms of your mood that you mentioned, or whether there might be something else going on. So I'm going to have my nurses give you a little questionnaire to fill out, and then I'm going to come back and I'd like to talk to you a little bit more. Is that okay?
Sure.
So I've given the patient a PHQ-9, a standardized screening test for depression, because she revealed to me that she's been having a depressed mood and some lack of interest, along with certain other stressors in her life, and also not only interference with sleep, but also with her a little bit in terms of sexual response. So I administer it and she scores a 10. Which is consistent with mild depression. And so what I'm going to do is explain to Veronica what this means and what I think is going on and then what I think her options are. So Veronica, thank you so much for filling out that questionnaire. And like I said, not only do you have symptoms that are very common in patients your age that are probably related to hormonal changes that your body is going through, but this test I did is a screening test for depression, which is also very common in this age group. And certainly you score something consistent with a mild depression. And a lot of times we find that it is related to the same hormonal fluctuations that are causing the changes in your period, as well as those hot flushes and night sweats that you're getting. And for that reason, there are actually several things that we can do to try to treat you and help improve your symptoms and your quality of life. So I'd like to go over those options, but beforehand, do you have any questions for me?
No, I'm glad that there are some options because I was going to ask if this is what it was going to be from now on. I feel like I'm still youngish and I just don't want to be like this forever and I don't want it to get worse.
So I think the best way to go over your options, because there are several, is what bothers you the most and what do you feel would be most important for you to treat right now in terms of your symptoms?
Well, the irregular periods, they make me nervous. They make me think I might be pregnant. That's probably what's bothering the most. But, now that we've talked about mood, I guess I didn't realize how much that was affecting me. And I think if I could feel better overall, that would be really great.
And now you mentioned about concern about pregnancy. Is that something when you're sexually active with your partner, are you using any contraception?
We use condoms sometimes, but he doesn't really like them and he thinks that it's not important at my age.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that besides having these irregular periods, which are very bothersome, and some mood changes that seem to bother you a lot, you're also having these hot flushes, night sweats, which are probably contributing to some of the changes that we see in your mood. And I noticed that in the past that you had used oral contraceptives. Did you ever have a problem with those in the past?
No, my gynecologist told me when I was 40 I should stop them.
And I see also that you do not smoke. Is that correct?
I do not.
And you don't have any history of any kind of blood clots or heart disease or anything like that.
No.
So yes, it's often I know a lot of clinicians will often stop a patient's oral contraceptives as they get older and less likely to become pregnant. But in your case, what I think these oral contraceptives may do is they may help to make your cycles more regular again, which is something that I know concerns you. There's nothing serious or bad about the fact that your periods are at first getting closer together and then you're starting to skip them. That's a natural part of the transition from the reproductive age to menopause. But since it's something that concerns or bothers you, providing you these combined oral contraceptives that have estrogen in them will not only help make your cycles more regular, certainly help prevent pregnancy, which at your age is certainly very unlikely, but certainly to give you that extra, make you feel a little more comfortable in that respect. But also, it may help treat those hot flushes and night sweats. And there are actually studies that patients like you who have mild depression, along with these hot flushes and night sweats, oral contraceptives or estrogen that's in them may actually help treat mild depression. So I think given the fact that those are the things that bother you the most, and the fact that you have had a positive experience with them in the past, that might be the most helpful. But I do want to make sure you know there are other options. There are medicines that we traditionally use for patients like you with depression. They're called SSRIs or SNRIs, and they are very effective at helping improve mood. But again, there are several studies that show that they help also improve those hot flushes and night sweats. The only disadvantage for you is it's not going to really help with those irregular periods. Won't make them worse, but probably won't make them better. We could also use much lower doses of estrogen than we would in birth control pills. But the problem is, it'll treat your hot flushes and night sweats very well. We don't need a lot of estrogen. It might even help your depressive symptoms. But since you are still getting your periods, sometimes using those low doses aren't enough to suppress your own body's production, and it might actually make your periods worse. So
That doesn't sound good.
I would recommend that we try the combined oral contraceptives. As that sound reasonable to you?
No, that sounds great. I was happy when I was on the combined oral contraceptive.
The other thing I'd like to do is I do find that again, you have a lot of things going on with your daughter moving out and your things going on at work. And many times I find that learning different ways to cope with stressors going through these life changes can help. And so if you would be interested, I do have colleagues who are therapists that might help you in terms of how to deal with some of those stressors. Is that something you might be interested in?
Sure. I think I could if I can find time and make it convenient, but I don't want it to just add more stress, but it does sound like a really good idea.
Well, let's see if that's something you could find a mutually convenient time for. I obviously, their exercise does so many good things, but exercising, I think, will also help, especially aerobic exercise. Wearing cool cotton clothing, always having cold drinks, you know, these new thermoses that you can carry around that will keep your drinks cold. I would advise avoiding spicy foods when possible. Doesn't mean never. And limiting alcohol, that doesn't mean never. But those things do tend to make your hot flushes and night sweats worse. There are also things you could do like meditation and things with that relaxed breathing. Also, I find will help my patients who get these hot flushes and night sweats.
I do try. I try to exercise. I have a dog that I walk regularly. And I don't drink much alcohol, but certainly I could pay more attention going forwards.
All right, great. And again, I'm sure both you and your dog will benefit from getting out. And so I'd like to see you back in a month. Very often I find that mood tends to often improve pretty quickly. And so we'll see. And then it might though take about 3 months or so for your body to readjust to being on the pill before we might see a significant change in your cycles. So I just want to make you aware of that. So not to worry if you don't see a significant improvement right away.
Okay. But thank you for that.
And I'll see you back in a month. And not to worry, if we find that your mood symptoms aren't improving, it's actually safe to add the SSRI or SNRI. So that's something we could do if necessary. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Levine.
All right. We'll see you back in a month. Take care.
Well, thank you both for that excellent role playing. This is Dr. Bachman back. And before we get into how well our doctor and patient did, I'd like to ask both Dr. Levine and the patient, what if the patient did an oral contraceptive pill? Dr. Levine, what would have been your next step if she said, oh, I've been told that birth control pills are not good? And of course, you tell her that obviously they are safe because she does not have any risk factors at age 45. But would you go to, one of the other options that you noted, the SSRI or the SNRI?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would do is try to find out what about the pill concerns her. Because I think if you don't get a specific, if you just overgeneralize your response to say they're safe, it can go in one ear and out the other. So I'd like to clarify, what is it that she heard? Does it causes breast cancer? It causes blood clot, whatever, so that I can specifically address her concern honestly and objectively, and also offer that there are other ways to provide that same cycle control, patches and rings, if it's just the fact that maybe she doesn't just like taking a pill. But if the bottom line is she doesn't want to be on an oral contraceptive, there are other options. But if, again, her main concern is controlling her cycles, then the other option might be a hormonal IUD, because that will help reduce her bleeding. You have to make sure she understands it's not going to make her periods more regular, but that's from a health standpoint isn't a concern, but it might make the bleeding less and also protect her lining from something called hyperplasia, from not ovulating, which can lead to concerns. And with that, I can offer her much lower doses of hormone therapy without worrying about it making her bleeding worse. And that opens it up to using, again, very low dose patches, using pills, rings, you know, a lot of different ways that that can be delivered. If she doesn't want hormones at all, then obviously it's not going to be an effective way to help regulate her menses, more just to reassure her that the period changes she's getting are not dangerous. And then I would certainly focus on an SSRI or SNRI, because at least then it's trying to improve her mood and possibly improving her vasomotor symptoms with the same medication.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Phillips, do you have anything to add to that? I agree with Jeff.
Oh, no, I agree with that completely. I also just want to add that when somebody chooses something non-hormonal and has irregular periods, I always make sure they know, what is normal bleeding, What is abnormal bleeding? What do you need to get in touch with me about? And that's why I tried to emphasize during playing Veronica that my periods, they looked the same each time. They felt the same each time, because if they don't look the same each time, if you bleed in between, and I think Jeff was asking me these questions to try to ascertain whether or not I'm ovulating, right? So if I skip a period for 2 or 3 months and then bleed for 14 days, that's much more concerning than if I skip a period for 1 month and then get what looks like a normal period, and that I don't have spotting here, spotting there, or cycles that make me worry more as a physician about anovulatory cycles. And then, as Jeff said, you know, we always have to be concerned in this age group of the endometrial hyperplasias.
And that was, go ahead, Dr. Levine.
I was just going to say, such a great point that Nancy brings up. Also, because we didn't talk about other things in her history. Does she have diabetes? Does she have obesity? Those things are going to increase the likelihood or risk of what's called hyperplasia. And I would have a lower threshold to be concerned with some of these irregular bleeding patterns if they were much more significant, to do an endometrial biopsy or another workup. And that's why getting the history is so important, because this patient doesn't have those risks. And because of the pattern is much more typical of someone who's going through perimenopause, really through a good history, avoiding having to do a more invasive procedure.
So that's the entree to my next question to both of you. And that is, would you consider a pelvic ultrasound in this individual who complains of, you know, the periods being irregular? Now, again, there was a very good history that they're coming more further apart rather than every week or 2 weeks. So that's reassuring. But would either of you have done a pelvic ultrasound? What was your threshold for that?
I don't think I would have, based on the history, nothing to suggest there wasn't pain. There was nothing to suggest potential risk of hyperplasia. There wasn't abnormal bleeding. I think, again, if I am a family practice doc who does pelvic exams, I would want to know that her pelvic exam was normal. But no, I don't think I would do a routine ultrasound in this patient. And I also don't think I would necessarily order any bloods. Hormone levels are generally not helpful. I don't think I have to worry about anemia or thyroid problems based on the history that she's giving me. So no, I think that this is, I think, a good place where you can initiate an intervention. And then if your intervention is not working or is working not as you predicted, then you might want to do more testing. But I don't think at this point I would. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, sorry to bore our audience, but I happen to agree with everything that Nancy said. Because I love ultrasounds. I perform ultrasounds. They're much less invasive than an endometrial biopsy. But for somebody with this presentation, I'm not worried about a structural issue. She's not having pain. She's not having regular periods that are very heavy or prolonged that make me think of a fibroid or some structural issue. Also, while ultrasounds are excellent for a patient who's not postmenopausal, looking at her lining might not be very helpful, because her lining might be thick just because of where she is in her cycle. So I think it can make a provider overly concerned. So I don't hear anything. And what I also loved that you mentioned, thank you, is that there is no place for ordering hormonal tests on this patient, because 1 week there'll be one level and 1 week another, because the whole part of the perimenopause or the menopausal transition is the fluctuation of her estradiol levels. And that's going to cause her FS and LH to fluctuate. And so they are not reliable tests, and you're going to mislead your patient by ordering them at this point. So I find they're not helpful, and there's nothing in her history that makes me want to get a thyroid test. She's not having bleeding that's heavy enough, or it's clear her fatigue seems to be sleep related, to order a blood count. So I don't think that's going to be helpful in the diagnosis. And sometimes, believe it or not, a really good history is going to lead us to what is probably going to be the best way to assess what's going on with the patient and managing it.
So another question, and I agree with that, and I think that the hormone levels are very expensive too. And as Jeff said, they're erratic at that point. So they're really not going to add to the management of this individual. What if this individual were a lesbian? Would your intervention have changed? Would you have suggested, because obviously there then a contraceptive would not have been necessary?
I don't think so. I mean, I certainly, you know, you don't need to give a birth control pill for birth control. And I always wish that there was a birth control pill that was actually called hormone regulation pill, because I think that would be so helpful for I know we're in the perimenopause now, but for the young kids whose parents don't want them on birth control, and in that situation where somebody doesn't want to call it birth control because that may be personally distressing to them. But I still think that I would have explained it the exact same way and given the exact same options.
You know, Veronica unsolicited brought up about having sex with her husband. I think it's so important, though, that we create our practices to be comfortable assessing gender preference along with gender identity, because I have certainly quite a few trans male patients who are going through these same symptoms. I also have patients who have had a tubal ligation, and that would not have changed my recommendation. What I love, again, that Nancy brought up, is I wish we could rename combined oral contraceptives to because both very young patients, parents say, oh, no, not my child. I don't want them on birth control. But the same thing with my patients who have same-sex partners, or my patients who are not sexually active, or my patients who've had tubal ligations. So I don't understand why you're giving me a contraception. No, I'm giving you a medication to regulate your hormones that will help with these hot flushes and night sweats, because, again, you have to explain to the patient what the problem is. It's those fluctuations that are making parts of your brain that control temperature regulation, your hypothalamus, and the blood vessels that have estrogen receptors are starved. And that's what's causing all these changes in your core body temperature and giving you these symptoms. So if we can regulate that, also it will help regulate your cycles if that's important to you. And that is what's important to this patient. She's 45. Her risk of pregnancy is obviously very low. But again, she's worried about pregnancy. So that's kind of icing on the cake, offering her the combined oral contraceptives. But if she was a patient who had a same-sex partner, she wasn't sexually active, had a tubal ligation, I would have offered the same thing. Maybe I would have liked to have called it something different, but it would have been the same exact prescription.
Well, to wrap up, that was an ideal patient doctor interview. As an observer, I thought that Dr. Levine covered all aspects of what this patient, Veronica Smith, came in with, that gave her options, that she was part of the discussion, part of the decision making, and that her follow-up was in a timely manner, so that if the bleeding did not improve, if the mood did not improve, if she did not feel that she was getting the relief that she wanted with the management that was discussed with her, then she would be able to again bring these topics up with Dr. Levine and have the management possibly altered. But this is really an ideal scenario of what, and I shouldn't say ideal, but it was the ideal interaction of what the patient-doctor relationship should be. I don't know if either of you have any ending comments on any aspect of the patient-doctor relationship.
I would bring up one other point. If this patient had scored higher on her PHQ-9, over 15, which is consistent with major depressive disorder, it's very likely she would have had a history of depression. It's unusual in the perimenopausal period to get major depression as a first episode. So I want to clarify that in her history. But regardless, if she was scored higher or had a history of depression responsive to SSRI or SNRI, I would have treated her first that way. brought her back and then could have added the combined oral contraceptive after. I wouldn't like to add two medicines at once, but it would have probably changed the order in which I prioritize the treatment.
Excellent point. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Phillips and Dr. Levine, for such a phenomenal interactive patient-doctor discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.